A61, number 8A.
Can you see that this is one way? Another way to come to our final conclusion about these ideas is that we say we have power and say, is now power mind or is it spirit or is it soul? And another way of doing it was, what is needed for power to be power? And for power to be power, we have seen today, it needs that behind power is a creative impulsion, that it needs a creator, that it needs a cause which expresses itself, that it needs action. We began to see these terms were all ideas of mind too, or at least they were put there as a hypothesis. And so they began to fit in again. And the more they began to fit in into each other, the more we had authority to see, oh, golly, these ideas are all ideas of mind. Did you get the last one? Yes? No. Yes. Okay. Then, let's take the other, under six, law. Just to... Yes?
Could we do one more on power?
One more on power. Okay, 302. Yeah, on which line?
32.
You have the creative power of the divine principle. Why does she use their principle? Why is it the creative power of the divine principle, truth?
It's the spirit reflection of the creative power versus the propagation in matter, up on line 6. So it would be using spirit.
Yeah, but she's not asking that. She's not asking why she uses spirit. She's asking why it is the power, the creative power of the divine principle. She isn't that? You are asking why she uses principle and not mind.
Huh? And I think I know why, but I'm not sure that I'm right.
That doesn't matter. You come along. Come.
Well, because it says later that principle governs the reflection. And that's what we're talking about, is the reflection of the creative power.
Yeah. But if it's the reflection, then you would say it's spirit, though.
No, but then it says that principle governs the reflection and principle...
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be very courageous, huh? Yeah. Yes, Frank?
Along those same lines, we have 507.15.
It's the same. 507. We haven't finished it. Frank says there is apparently a similar one on 507.15. Yeah, the universe of spirit, and it's very nearly that, reflects the creative power of the divine principle or life, which reproduces the multitudinous forms of mind and governs the multiplication of the compound idea man. Well, this is a rather complicated one with a lot of synonymous terms in it, but it has its same principle behind it, yeah? So I think if we get clear on the first one, I think we have a help for the second one. The first one on 302, and 3. Jane said it has to do with principle governing the ideas. Our mind doesn't govern the ideas. Ideas are governed by a principle, not by mind. The moment you have ideas and you ask, what is the central authority? You have principle. And not mind. Mind creates all the ideas. Mind governs the body, but it doesn't govern the ideas. The moment you have ideas and you ask for the governing principle, you see, for the governing authority, you would say the governing authority is principle. Therefore, we'll see when we come to that question 7, where we said, let's see how govern is used with all the 7 synonymous terms. We'll see that very clearly there. That when govern is used with principle, it's used completely different than with mind. And it's always used, well, we take it already now, it's always used. The moment you ask, you say, there are a lot of ideas in the universe, but they are all governed by one. What is that one? Principle, huh? You wouldn't say soul. You wouldn't say spirit, huh? You wouldn't say life, huh? You would say principle, huh? Because it's the principle, the one of the infinitude of ideas. Always when the relationship between all the ideas and its central pivot is under consideration, it's principle. So it's a combination of mind with principle. Yes. And therefore in that other one on 507 we get the multiplication of those ideas. But that's a bit a difficult one. Yeah. All right. Shall we go to law? Now, here again we have fundamentally stated that the intrinsic nature of mind is that it is law. We arrived first in one way to see that law has to do with mind because we said, what is needed to have law? We said in order to have law we need power, we need a cause, the cause leading to effect. Therefore, we need cause, we need power, we need action, we need a basis from which to start in law. All these are mind, therefore law conforms to these ideas and therefore is also mind. That was one hypothesis, so to say, one conclusion. And we need a few conclusions in order to have a full proof. So, is that... Do you remember now that way of thinking, huh? To see, does an idea conform to other ideas of the same synonymous term? Yes? Now, we take it as a hypothesis that law is mind, but she also speaks about law in relationship to spirit. For instance, let's take 207.12. Well, we just can read from 10. Evil is not supreme, good is not helpless, nor are the so-called laws of matter primary, and the law of spirit, secondary. Very, very easy. The problem is, are laws of matter primary or are they secondary? That's the proposition, the main proposition. Answer, matter must be answered by spirit. That's predominant. The law of matter, law of spirit. You see, just as if we would have said... And the so-called power of matter is the so-called power of matter primary and the power of spirit secondary. That would have been another question. But again, in the same vein. So matter, spirit. Secondary is law. Let's take perhaps another one. 302.23. We can just read from 22 after the comma. And because this real man is governed by soul instead of sense, by the law of spirit, not by the so-called law of matter. Ah, very easy, huh? But let's take one that is different. 183:19. Here it is that laws of nature are laws of spirit. Why not laws of mind? Nature, huh? Spirit, huh? See, what she wants to bring out, her proposition is there is nature, there are laws in nature. Now, are these laws of nature material laws, as the physicists will tell us? Or are these laws in nature spiritual? She couldn't say mind. The moment she states them as laws of nature, she has, so to say, given the pedal note. They said it's a question of nature, which is spirit, huh? And not material. So she had to answer it through the laws of spirit and not through the laws of mind. And we come to 63:1. Yes, perhaps we start on 62:31. Because mortals believe in material laws and reject the signs of mind. Can you see now? Why doesn't she say, because mortals believe in material laws and reject the signs of spirit, if it is material law? You see, here she doesn't so much say material laws. What she means, are there laws, huh, that are ruled by matter as active matter, huh, by matter that is intelligent, huh? And therefore she has to answer it by mind, huh, by the science of mind. But this is actually not the main point. This does not make materiality first and the superior law of soul last. You would expect that when she says this does not make materiality, you would at once expect that she answers somehow with spirit, or because that which counteracts materiality would be spirit. And you expect that she would say that materiality would, this does not make materiality first, and you expect, and spirit last. Huh? But she says, and the superior law of soul last. Why? Because soul rules, huh? Yeah. The greater controls the lesser, yes. So the moment we have the superior law, it's soul, huh? Because always soul is that which is superior. The greater ruling the lesser, that's the rule of soul. So the moment the question is not a question of opposites, huh? The question of materiality and spirituality, that's opposite, huh? The moment is a question of which is superior to the other. You have soul. The superior law of soul. Yes? You know, only when one knows these things and has it in the fingertips as consciousness, only then you can open up the textbook in its laws. Perhaps we have next year opportunity to open up a chapter of the textbook together. And there you see that if one doesn't have that very distinct sense, what is spirit and soul? That spirit always is a question, is this real or is this real? Huh? It's always opposites. Is this real or is this real? That's always spirit. But the moment she says, which one controls the other? Which one is on top of the other? Which one is the higher? Huh? Which one rules over the other? It's always soul, the moment you make like this. You see it spiritually. Huh? As long as we are in spirit, you make the line of demarcation. Say, this is real and this is unreal. And there is a strict line of demarcation in between. That's always the question of spirit, of dualism. The moment the proposition comes up, what is about the other? Like this, then it's always soul. That's why then when we come to soul, soul controls the lower, soul rules over the lower, soul is above the lower, soul is without, is not within, but without the whole. The greater controls the lesser. Can you see? It isn't separation. That's spirit. And only when you have that innate spiritual consciousness, you can read in a chapter over pages and pages and you say, golly, she's always talking about soul and perhaps she never mentions the term soul. And then the chapter opens up in an order. And suddenly a chapter makes a history, a story, which is absolutely clear and ordered. But one has to know the subjects, and not so much the occurrence of a synonymous term. The occurrence of a synonymous term in the text does not indicate the story of a chapter. It's the subject dealt with in the chapter that defines in which synonymous term she is speaking. Yeah? Is that difficult? My word, without seeing that, the textbook remains a hidden book, a closed book. It's not open. We read words, we read sentences, and we can love sentences, and we can get a kick out of every sentence, and we can perhaps make a demonstration with this sentence and that sentence. It's all right. It's atomistic thinking. But really, the wealth of it comes out when we can read the text with the language of spirit. And that language of spirit is not a language of terms. It's this language I am trying to cultivate this week. Hmm? So these examples are very good, and I just go through them again and again and again. Let's take another on law, perhaps on 427. 427, 1. 2, 3. If it is true that man lives, this fact can never change in science to the opposite belief that man dies. Can you hear when you read it? You know, I got into the habit when I read a sentence, I only read tones of the synonym. I don't read anymore the words. Huh? If I read it, I read life, 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 huh? And something else, which I don't tell you now. If it is true that man lives, huh? I have at once a sense now her main consideration is about living and about life. Huh? This fact can never change in the science to the opposite belief that man dies. Can you see? Man lives, man dies. That's the tone of life. And so she takes it up again and says, life is the law of soul. Why on earth does he say life is the law of soul? Why doesn't he say this is the law of life?
Soul is changeless.
Soul is changeless, huh? Why on earth does she say suddenly soul is changeless? Where is the reason that she says that? In the proposition in the first sentence. The first sentence says, when I read it, if it is true that man lives, I hear life, life. This fact can never change in science, and I hear soul that is changeless. Huh? I hear soul, life and soul. But as I read it, through the opposite belief that man dies. Therefore, life is the law of soul. Life is the law of changelessness. Can you hear? Can you see that this sentence, as taken out of context, doesn't really mean very much? Huh? Say, if in reading or if in a lesson sermon we leave out the first sentence and start with line 2, life is the law of soul, even the law of the spirit of truth, and soul is never without its representative, we have lost the proposition. We have lost the proposition. We give an answer for a proposition which we don't know. Therefore, in that whole thing, the first sentence is the proposition. Life is life. Can life change into its opposite, death? And I hear life and soul. Can you hear it? For me, it's life and soul. I translate it right back into just a tonality. I reduce all this wordy thing and just always in synonymous terms. Huh? And I hear life is the law of soul, because life cannot change. Isn't it wonderful? You know, that's the way slowly you begin to read the textbook. It's no more a lot of words. It is said apparently that Mrs. Eddy had a very big vocabulary for her time. I guess next to Shakespeare or so, had the biggest vocabulary. I have a very small vocabulary for reading the textbook. I don't read all these words. I only read synonymous terms. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system. So let's reduce the wordy sense and just hear what it is here. Life is soul. What does it mean? Life is life and cannot change into its opposite. It's changeless soul. Life and soul.
Being unchangeable.
Being unchangeable. Can you hear? Therefore, you begin to realize that the interpretation of the text is a matter of understanding, really, the proposition stated in a paragraph or in a few paragraphs, and see that all the rest is just elaborating on that proposition. So here it is, the law of soul, and not the law of mind. Law of mind it would be just discord in one's ear. Life is the law of mind here. There are other propositions, huh, where you would say, oh yes, life is the law of mind. Huh? But the proposition would have to be quite different. So not every answer is a right answer to a question. Only a right question has its right answer. Yeah? Is that clear? All right. Let's take, well, you have law of life. All right, we know that. I just read it to you. You have certainly done it, where she says, the belief in sin and death is destroyed by the law of God. And if you hear sin and death, you more or less know that that something about life must come. And because it's a belief in it, therefore it's the law of God, which is the law of life instead of death. The law of life, death. Very easy. Or if you have truth, it is truth through her eternal laws unveils error. What unveils error? What discovers error? Truth. And there is a law about it, so truth is that law which uncovers error. It's not mind. Mind is the law itself. Yeah? I just hurry because we only have a few minutes left. Well, you have done all the others about love, and you have seen that, again here with law, see, that we can say, law is fundamentally mind, huh? Because she says, maintain the facts of Christian science that all causation is mind acting through what? acting through spiritual law. Now you have mind acts through what? Through spiritual law. Does not rectify an opposite. So it's intrinsic law. Intrinsic mind. Yeah. So here we have again that we see only a few references may show us that mind is, or that law is intrinsically a characteristic of mind, but the moment that law has to rectify an opposite, it will be used in conjunction with spirit in order to correct the material law. It is the law of soul when it corrects the belief that material law can be superior to spiritual law. It corrects that and says, no, it's the superior law of soul. In life it is the law of life correcting the belief that death is a law, that you cannot evade it, that truth is the law for uncovering error, that love is the law against hate and jealousy and whatever there is. Yeah. Okay, that's that.